Good morning. So as Sean mentioned, my name is Hannah Hamdi. I am from Newark, New Jersey. And this work is based on my dissertation. It spanned about 4 years. I have no conflict of interest to disclose. And so the general purpose of my dissertation was to look at how do we define food environments and what factors actually comprise food environments, and how do we gauge factors that shape the residents' food acquisition practices. And I had two objectives. The first one was to systematically categorize what neighborhood food environment is, and within three different neighborhoods in Newark, New Jersey. And the second was to document the neighborhood factors that influence residents' food acquisition practices. I used this conceptual model to define what neighborhood food environment meant. For the purpose of this talk, I'm only going to focus on this section, the consumer environment. And within the consumer environment, I looked at grocery stores, restaurants, the food prices, the quality of food, looking at both the packaging and expiration of foods. And we'll talk about food today. This is the design that I used for the dissertation. However, today we're only going to look at this measure. This instrument was developed during my first year in the doctoral program, and that came out of a pilot study that I conducted looking at where do the residents of the South Ward actually purchase fruits and vegetables. And what I quickly found out is that the food issue was not just limited to access of fresh produce, but just food in general. And that food, the prices of food was an issue that we didn't really discuss at the time. So I wanted to gauge how does food prices change and what actually changes, how often does it change, and what stores and what foods, and who does this impact the most. So I developed this survey, and what I did is I went into all the grocery stores that I was piloting for that particular study, and at the time it was only 5. And at the time, the instrument looked at 14 items, vegetables and fruits. And the preliminary findings were startling, but it's nothing something I didn't know, but it wasn't something that was empirically captured. So I went back, like I was supposed to do, and I did literature review. And no one has ever captured, the changes or the fluctuation of food prices by time. So I called the USDA. They were like, well, we have the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. But that wasn't something I was looking for. I was wanting something that was more, relevant to what my question was, and not sort of this general idea, yes, food prices change by seasonality or by even some adverse event, by weather. So I developed the survey, and it looked at 86 food items, from fruits, vegetables, to cereals, meats, and drinks, dairy, and sodas and juices. I trained about 6 community residents how to collect data, and we went out and collected, we attempted to collect data in all the grocery stores in Newark's South Ward, which has about 91 grocery stores, no supermarkets. And it was a challenge because it was dense. And like Jay mentioned, the density of food, the food venues in Newark is very concentrated. The South Ward is only 5.1 miles. So when I did the proximity test, the walkability index, for another portion of the study, I found that there is about 8.9 food venues for every quarter of a mile. And there was no difference in terms of the zoning classification of all these 3 residents, except that the commercially zoned environment, which is the most impoverished neighborhood, had the least amount of foods. So it was corner stores that operated at a very limited time and offered very limited food, but it cost the most amount of money. So that particular instrument I wanted to capture the prices between the cost of standard and healthy food items. And to my surprise, the cost of healthy food items never changed because they were consistently high. And then I looked at the price movement over time, and this is what we found. So out of the 91 stores, we identified three different stores that we could measure, and they was on local supermarkets, which were about 2,400 square feet in size. And I used one large chain supermarket that, you know, so it was on the outside, but closely used or mostly used by the residents. So store number one is the large supermarket that existed on the neighboring town. Store two and three are the local corner store, local supermarkets. As you can see, these are the prices of the average food vegetable prices. And these food items were identified as the most fresh produce used by the community, by the three neighborhoods. So the cost of regular milk, and this is the most utilized size of milk, changes drastically at the beginning of the month. Store three was consistently highest in all the dairy products. And store two, prices fluctuate, but not as high as store three. And store one does change at the beginning. I mean, there are some changes, but not as drastic as the other two. And then the arrow in the middle reflects. So at the beginning of the month, not only the food prices change, but by the middle of the month when we went to capture the changes, there was about 60% of missing food items. So the shelves were literally empty. So when we're doing the reliability issue, we couldn't find agreement, and we thought it was the issue of the instrument. But A is that, you know, there were no foods available, so we couldn't really agree. And the food prices were not marked. So when I would go in and record versus the other research assistants, we were given different prices. And this was clearly reflected in the focus group. So when we asked the residents, how much food do you pay for cereal? Well, most of them said, well, it depends on the mood of the store owner. So that's the cost of milk. And this is the cost of regular milk by first month, middle of the month, and then the end of month. So these are the average prices. These are all the cereals. So when I was developing the instrument, I looked at the WIC service items to see what actually, you know, what are the stores selling and who are they selling it to. So when we developed the survey, we took the foods that were on the survey were the foods that the community purchases and what WIC Foods offers to the community. So these are the most sold cereal, from the WIC vouchers. So when we looked at the redemption, these are the highest sold cereals. And as you can see, the prices are very high. So when we looked at cereals by stores, store three was consistently highest. And store three, the highest that, of the cost of cereal was up to $7. And these were only unique to WIC cereals. It's the local supermarket. And store one is a large supermarket, the large chain supermarket that exists outside of the three neighborhoods, but most utilized because that's the nearest store that they access. And these are juices. And this is also within the WIC voucher that they can purchase. And the prices were not any different, you know, than the foods that, you know, the other foods. They were highest at the beginning, they dropped to the middle, and then they rise back again. This is sodas. And the prices were consistently low, never changed. And the highest spikes that we saw were around Thanksgiving. So food prices not only change at the beginning of the month, but then also by holidays. So Thanksgiving, you know, the food is seasoned, right? We all pay high prices. Food costs a lot at, you know, for different holidays. But for families who are on WIC, you know, they're consistently struggling. So in the focus group, when we asked, you know, like, so why do you choose to buy the juices versus the sodas? Sometimes they can't afford to buy the, you know, with WIC because the prices are so high, right? And what we found out, even if you have WIC to give you foods, right? So when the stores are raising those prices, you have to accommodate for that, you know, for the money that you don't have, right? So a lot of the families were spending money out of pocket. So the policies that, so the implication of this research is actually we're working very closely with the WIC department in New Jersey, and they're looking at food prices changes, you know, at the beginning of the month and at the end of the month. And then the other thing that we're working with is the price tagging. It's illegal in the state of New Jersey to not tag food. I don't know how it is somewhere else, but it's illegal. And the other thing, in New Jersey, a law came about last year that if food prices increase by 10% during a hurricane season or anything, that the merchants are actually liable. You know, it's illegal. But what we've found is that, you know, at the beginning of the month, and most families are distressed, the cost of food actually rises by 40%. So. That's it. Any questions?
Hi.
No, it doesn't. So what the families we found is that they actually cash their WIC checks. So if rent is high, they would go into the store and they would cash their checks for cash. Do you understand? Okay. So it's illegal. So but the families are being penalized for this. So what we found is that the families would go in with the checks, right? So they would buy a cereal at $7 because rent is high. So what they do is they cash their WIC vouchers. So they make up the difference for rent through cash, through the WIC. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I can't hear, I'm sorry. Oh, the grocers are so they're cashing the WIC vouchers for $1 to 50 cents, $1 to 75 cents. So when people talk about, you know, WIC vouch and how much they're spending money, I get this question a lot. Well, how does that affect the families? It does, because they have other expenses, so they utilize their WIC to cash to make, you know, to make ends meet. Well, I didn't know. Maybe it is, but I only looked for WIC. And it was easy to identify WIC because the foods are marked WIC family. How much other people are, you know, spending, I'm not sure. But it was very shocking for us to see. We're like, well, and we get this a lot. How does this make an impact on, because the families are not maximizing on what they're supposed to get from the WIC vouchers. So when they're cashing this $1 to 75 cents, they're only purchasing about a quarter of what they can get, and the rest they're making, you know, to pay rent, to pay for other gas. So here's the other thing. In New Jersey, there's a 5-acre law. So anything that's less than 5 acres, the WIC vouchers cannot be redeemed. So there are no vouchers, so are there no farmers? They can catch them at farmers markets, but not in community gardens or local farms. So the other thing that we're looking at this is to actually to change this 5-acre rule. So you don't have access to healthy food within the stores. You don't have access to farmers markets because farmers markets do not come to the neighborhoods because of crime. And if they do come, they only come once a week. And how long can you really stretch, you know, perishable food for a week? And then there are community gardens. Newark is full of community gardens and local farms, but WIC families from Maurice cannot. So I looked into the WIC office, and it's a USDA issue. The USDA doesn't know whose law it is. So we're now trying to figure out. So yes, so the other arm of my study looks at, you know, the food environment, what's available. So what do they eat? Yeah, so they shop within the stores that's around them. So they eat pizza. Because pizza, yes, so because you have family deals, right? So you eat pizza. You eat Chinese food. You eat, you know, McDonald's doesn't even come to Newark or in the section that we are because it's a second tier of fast food. So you have these, you know, pops and moms or localized grocery stores and corner restaurants that families could actually maximize the amount of money that they have. So it's pizza, Chinese, deli sandwiches. Does that answer your question? Yeah, so I use the NEMS R and NEMS S.
Okay.
And the NEMS S was modified to include cereals.
But we didn't see NEMS R up there, right?
No, I only presented the I just presented the food price index inventory.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that wasn't NEMS inventory.
Yeah,
oh,
this was okay. No, this was just that one particular survey. Absolutely. Exactly. So in the New York Times about a few months ago, somehow somebody discovered this, and so we need to penalize, you know, WIC parents and SNAP carriers. It was like, well, how do you penalize the poor when they're merely trying to survive this, right? But it's not so much the families, it's the stores that we need to target. And I don't want to demonize all the corner stores because there are some grocery stores who extend vouchers to families who are unable to make it, right? And they give them credit to the end of the month or to the beginning of the month. So they're not all bad. But the majority, when you have, and then the other component of the study, it looks at the lifetime of corner stores in Newark. It's about 8 months. So a store comes in, and then they make money, and they leave. Less than 1% of the corner stores in Newark are owned by residents of Newark. So the community has no say, you know, what food that they can bring in.
We have time for one more question, and then we'll have an opportunity.
Yeah,
I think so.
So just a clarification on which store. You said it's a neighborhood supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a corner store. It was more like an independent supermarket.
So we... So I, in the other component, I sort of defined what stores are available. So there are convenience stores, there are bodegas, which have been in the community for more than 10 and 15 years. And they actually are, you know, sort of pillars of the community. They help the residents make ends meet. Then you have, you know, the grocery stores, and then you have local supermarkets. They're smaller than large chain supermarkets, but they're bigger than corner stores. And it's only spatial, right? So how many square feet they are, or how many cashiers that they have, and how many much aisles that they carry food. Yeah, so next week I'm going to D.C. with our local food council and the mayor's office to look at this data. 2 weeks ago I gave a presentation, invited the community and our food policy council, and then the New Jersey Department of Health, which focuses on food and nutrition, came out. The Assemblywoman, in 2 or 3 weeks, we're sitting with Sheila Oliver, our state speaker, to bring this to legislation.
We're going to have to move on, but we'll have an opportunity to get that question.